Good morning, Gordon. Let's talk about you. You have said that getting same-sex marriage passed was one of the General Assembly's greatest accomplishments this year. How will this affect you personally? Will we soon be hearing wedding bells for you and your longtime partner, Marcus LaFond?
I think that's probably a question you direct to Marcus LaFond. No, I mean, I've always said that. I'd love to be married. And, I believe in family. I believe in commitment. And I've been trying to live my life that way with my dear partner, who is my family accepts as family anyway. So at some point, I'm sure we will tie the knot, as they say. No plans at this point, but it is very special. And especially in terms of the passage of the bill and the timing of it coming out right before the Supreme Court's ruling on the California case, and especially DOMA federally, is just, what a moment to be in the position that I was blessed to be in. And I will never forget that. And all the people that worked on that, the bill signing was just majestic and really brought home how important this was to so many people, whether you're gay or straight, and how so many people can truly achieve through the democratic process, small d democratic. And a wonderful moment, absolutely joyous moment.
Well, that's great, Mr. Speaker. But once again, the Assembly seems to be making tax policy on almost an ad hoc basis without real detailed study. For instance, at the last minute, the Assembly approved cutting alcohol taxes, and it looked to some of us like this was done only because an influential Democrat, Representative Jan Malik of Warren, owns a liquor store that competes with Massachusetts stores that have no sales taxes. Is this a sound way to do business?
Well, I'll dispute you on your notion of ad hoc basis. We that have been in government for a long time, you remember my background is I was a finance chairman, and as we've seen the retail buying change, if you will, through internet sales, the whole debate in Washington about the Main Street Fairness Act, the relevancy of the sales tax has been an issue that's been on the table in some way, shape, or form for a decade now. And because of the actions of Massachusetts, and really there's been, and Representative Malik made a great case in terms of the cross-border, because Rhode Island's a small state. We're not like Wyoming, where if you're not going to drive hours out of state to buy another bottle of alcoholic beverages. In Rhode Island, because of our size and proximity, in both the Connecticut, and remember, we opened earlier on Sunday looking at Connecticut. But it gave us an opportunity when Massachusetts voters said zero sales tax to finally figure out, does cross-border sales have an impact? So what we put together, and I thought it was very creative that the chairman of finance and the finance committee came up with, is a 16-month pilot program to say, look, let's go zero on alcoholic beverages, because we do have a one-on-one viewpoint from Massachusetts, and let's see if the notion is really real. And if it really is real, it may then become applied to other types of stuff, because we are a small state. I'm close to the Massachusetts in terms of going off of the big box stores than I am to Rhode Island ones, where I live on the east side. But it gave us an example to study something, to look at something. So it's not ad hoc. We have been concerned about the sales tax on both a statewide and a federal level because of just the way people purchase things now. And we're trying to figure out what's the most relevant way to make public policy going forward vis-a-vis the sales tax.
The job of mayor of Providence may be opening up again if Angel Taveras decides to make a run for governor. Can you see yourself running for mayor?
Right now, I see myself trying to run a House of Representatives. I know that's a question, Flo, they've been asked a lot about. I'm a child of Providence, born and raised in Providence, lived in Providence all my life. It could be a fantastic job. I mean, we have a great mayor right now who's not indicated either way whether he's running for mayor again or other office. I'm supportive of the mayor in that office. I try to support the city of Providence as the capital city of our state and an economic driver of our state as much as I can. I'm focused on doing the job. I am a speaker. We have, right, as we talked about earlier on the show, we have a toll bridge study coming up. We also have a study looking at the payments going forward on the 38 studio bonds. We have oversight, Chairman Mike Marcella. We have plans to look at the way the monitoring was done at 38 studios. We have plans to look at the city and town pension reports that we're due to have continuing look at over the fall session on regulatory reform. So there is a lot of work to do in terms of my role as a speaker, and that's what I'm focusing on.
There's a big change coming in healthcare in Rhode Island. We're going to have the healthcare exchange. I believe it's going to be called Health Source Rhode Island. They did not take my idea for quahog care. But I'm wondering, the legislature hasn't had a lot to do with this. The governor created this by an executive decree. And I'm wondering, has there been enough assembly oversight of this?
Well, you will see more oversight. A lot of it was the spade work getting together, which really is executive function. And I've been very comfortable. Others may not be, but I've been comfortable in terms of the governor's work with the executive office working on that through both bringing back Christy Ferguson, who I'd worked with during the Ammon administration. A lot of respect for her skills and her way to get things done. Working with the Health and Human Services Secretary, Steve Cosentino, as you all know, a dear friend and was a former finance chair. So I've been comfortable where they've been going, but a lot of it is that spade work. The oversight in terms of it will take place. There is a legislative role as we go forward with the whole healthcare exchange, but a lot of it I think has been appropriately done, and it's led to, I think, some good results.
And this time on the State Economic Development Corporation, the legislature has approved sweeping changes to this agency, including renaming it, putting it under a cabinet-level secretary, requiring it to meet greater accountability standards, and adopting a code of ethics. Do you think any of these changes will make it a more effective jobs-creating agency?
Absolutely, because I think it wasn't just about terms of reforming EDC. I mean, in the wake of the 38th studio, it was like, let's blow up EDC. But there was opportunity in the crisis created by that to look at how does Rhode Island go about doing economic development? What are the elements of economic development? I was a strong supporter of, and I'm glad to see that the Senate has passed it along with us, made concessions there, made concessions with the governor. I know he let the bills take effect without a signature, but it really is not only about the EDC and the renaming and the transparency, as you suggested, but it was also creation of the Office of the Secretary, the Executive Office, also putting together a four-year strategic plan that is a consensus-built plan. It's about putting together what we pass economic advisors, business leaders, academic leaders, looking in terms of formulating that plan. Again, a plan that's going to be like Massachusetts, when everyone says, look to Massachusetts and the wonderful economic movements they've made. It's about really taking advantage of a crisis to reform the whole way we do economic development. And the key I advocated for the secretary in particular was we asked an EDC office for the last decade to be part of economic development without having any seat at the table when you're looking at education policy, transportation policy, all of which with now everyone knows is fundamentally important to how you create and sustain a vibrant economic development activity in your state. So I think the reforms are not only the restructuring of the EDC as a corporate entity because there's bonding and other facility things they have to do there, but also looking at how you make a secretary part of the governor's cabinet, part of the discussion, and then creating a plan that becomes the strategic vision of a state that has buy-in, passage by both houses, but has a consensus built to go forward.
Mr. Speaker, is there a way, and I know this has gone on for 100 years, so I'm not blaming you specifically, but is there any way that we can curb a little bit, at least, this chaotic end of session rush and flurry of bills passed in the middle of the night? Is there any way you can deal with that?
Well, I think we've already taken a great step there. If you look at, and I know that others have written about this, the only time we've gone over the 10:30 rule, we went a little over the last night, but it was until like 11:20, and the 1:30 over with the budget to get the budget done that second day, the first day, and came back to do it. So I think that's reforming as well. We are trying to, and you haven't seen the pattern, Scott, but over the last few years, trying to get more bills out earlier. But the problem you have is that the legislature is basically brought into three segments. You have the first segment where you have reps putting their bills together. You have people, because if there's no bills to vet, what are you going to talk about? So they're going through the first third of the session, putting those bills together, putting the legislation. The second third is really the committees vetting those bills, taking the testimony. And then the last third tends to be when you tend to pass them. So part of it's inherent to the structure of the building itself. I mean, I know everyone talks about they hold bills to extort things out of people. You know, and at some point you've got to keep control, and they did it more so in the past. You give up some power as a leader when you pass things earlier, but we have been passing bills earlier. But a lot of the stuff that tends to be the gnarliest and more detailed lends itself because it needs more study, and it tends to be at the end. And we're making better ways to do that in terms of making sure things are done earlier. We're doing hearings in the fall and oversight, for instance. So we're asking a lot from people that were elected to do part-time. I think you'll see all those structural changes will make a difference as we go forward. And I'm hoping the institution, again, as we do transparency through live streaming, through bill tracking, and all the technology stuff that we're doing and taking advantage of, which should have been done early, but thankfully, I mean, I've been able to do that on my watch to make it better process for the public, and hopefully they'll appreciate the result.
We've been talking this morning to Rhode Island Speaker of the House, Gordon Fox. Gordon, on behalf of Scott and myself, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Oh, you're most welcome, Flo. I appreciate it. Enjoyed it. Scott's good seeing you as always.